Okay, we are still on lesson three. I believe last time I finished going over the readings in the first part of the chapter. That's what I call my part of the chapter. Now we come to page 41, the further readings, and that is your part of the chapter. And in a way, you have passage one. I have to say, I almost did it for you, since all you have to do is substitute words and you've answered. So if we go down the list, let us say Bhikkhu Jihan.
Say the translation, right?
Yeah, so but give only the more tricky points. We ask for explanation. Otherwise, since you have the explanation that I gave for the first part, it's almost self-evident. Okay.
Right. So what do you think about this? Sala, is there non-greed?
Yeah.
And then Sala, this non-greedy person who is without covetousness, thus...
Wait. Did you do... You're reading from your papers reading. Rather than... It seems you skipped over something.
Did I?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. From Evang Bhante and Anabijati Koaham.
Oh, right, okay. Yes, Venerable.
Yeah.
And then... Sala, I speak of the meaning of absence of covetousness.
This is the way I understand it. It's the idiom, it's difficult to translate very literally into English. Okay,
this means covetousness?
I would say that's the way to put it.
I say this means
non-covetousness. You see, in Pali, we have these strings of words which are roughly synonymous. One is lobha. We usually translate greed. Abhija, covetousness. Raga, lust. Tanha, craving. Chanda, desire. So these words are pretty much synonymous. So we have negation of lobha is alobha. Non-greed, literally it's non-greed, but it's, you could say, detachment from greed. Then the opposite of abhija there's an H there. Is anabija. And so here the text, the Buddha is saying simply that the meaning of non-greed is non-covetousness. Okay, continue.
Sala, this non-greedy person.
Yeah, person is understood. It's implied in aludo. Aludo means not greedy. But since no other subject is specified, we have to understand that it's this non-greedy person. Or we could take the ayang, which means this one or he. This one who is non-greedy without covetousness. Okay, continue.
Does not kill beings,
yeah.
Does not take ungiven things, or does not steal,
yeah.
Does not commit sexual misconduct.
Does not
go to someone's
wife. He does not go to the wives of others. Or in other words,
doesn't... Does not covet?
I wouldn't... Use covet. Yeah, he doesn't go to the wives of others, or in other words, he doesn't commit adultery.
Okay. He does not... I wrote down, it does not go to someone else's wife.
Yeah, that's literal, yeah.
Does not speak falsely.
Yeah.
Now, this one is a bit different from the formula before. Does not encourage another person for that state.
Okay, I'll explain that.
And yeah. To end it, he said, therefore, he is for the long time welfare and happiness.
Well, I'll explain the yangs. Okay, first I just want to go backtrack up to neva panang hanati. Here, when we have a chain of negations, usually eva is emphatic. It's a way of saying verily so or just so, but this very same thing, rupang yeva, it is just form. But here, when you have a chain or string of negations, the first one is negated with eva, so it becomes neva. Then the others are negated simply with na. It's somewhat like in English we say either this or that or that. Either X or Y. Or actually, neither X nor Y. In Pali, it's the neither is indicated neva, the nor by just simply na. Similarly, when you have a string of terms which are joined together, a conjunction, usually the first one is cheva, then the other is cha, cha. And neva, of course, is na plus eva. It's the sandhi conjunction. And then this.
So cheva cha is either or?
No, cheva cha would be both and. Yeah. Either or would be simply va followed by va. Eva doesn't enter into that. But when negating several items, the first is neva. So neva panang hanati, na adinang adiyati, na parang paradarang agachati, and so on. Then the last one, this last one, parampi na tatataya samadapeti. Here, parang means other, another person. Though it's singular, we could understand it has a general application, so you could just render it as others. Then this tatataya, it's a special kind of expression. Do you know what case it is?
Dative
case. It's tata. Tata means thus, such. Like we have tathagata, meaning thus come. But then it becomes an abstract noun. You could say almost meaning thusness. But this is not the thusness, the philosophical thusness. But this means such a state, or in this case, such behavior. And then it becomes dative case. So the sense is that he does not encourage or instruct samadapeti. He does not instruct others in such behavior, or does not encourage them towards such behavior. Then yangza here, the last clause, yangza hoti, digaratang hitaya sukaya. Yangza, the sa is abbreviation of asa, yang asa. Which means which, yang is which, asa is for him, hoti is, digaratang means long time, hitaya sukaya, for welfare, for happiness.
which for him leads to long-time welfare and
happiness. Yeah, yeah. Which for him leads to his welfare and happiness for a long time. I think the stiga ratang in the Sanskrit form, dirga ratram, came to be translated by at least some of the Chinese translators as for a long night, because I was reading a translation of a Mahayana sutra translated into English from Chinese, and it had a phrase which said something for, it leads, something like, it leads to his welfare and happiness for long nights. And I realized that they were translating
literally.
Yeah, very literally. Probably the old Chinese translators had translated from Sanskrit literally, perhaps. Okay, continue. Oh, you did the Evang Bhante. Okay. Evang, okay, the next one. Sharon? Okay, good.
The meaning of one country.
Yeah.
The meaning of
one. Wait, we have to go up one. Tang King Manyata Salha Ati Adoso Ti.
What do you think about this?
Yeah.
The meaning of one country.
Yeah. Yeah, but the meaning of this is, okay, adoso is non-hatred. Abhyapado, let's see.
Abhyapado is ill will, or
yeah,
non-anger.
Yeah, you say non-anger or non-ill will. Yeah. So the meaning of this, of non-hatred, is non-ill will. Or benevolence, make it a positive, or goodwill. Okay. Then the next the next sentence.
This non-ill-will person.
Yeah.
Without anger.
Okay. So I would say, to keep it consistent, this person, this non-hating person, with a with a mind free from ill will. You see, abhyapana chito. Yeah, that's good, okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, continue. Wait, we didn't come to drinking. No, panang is a life. There is a word. Oh, I see. Yeah, there is another word, panang, which means drinking. But this is a panang with a dot under the N, which means, pana means a living creature, a living being. Yeah, he doesn't, and then hanati is to strike, to kill. Oh, living beings, yeah. 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 Right, yeah, yeah. And the next one? Wait, the parampina tatataya samadapeti. Right, right. Right. Yeah. Okay, he doesn't, this, next to the last phrase, he doesn't, samadapeti means encourage, or, let's see what word they give.
Arouse.
Instruct.
Incite.
Excuse me? He doesn't arouse, or let's say, encourage others in such behavior. And then it's that will be for his welfare and happiness for a long time. Okay, the next one. Friends, why don't you finish them? Finish it off. The next.
Sure, Bhante. Yes, Venerable.
Yeah.
What do you think about illusion?
What do you think, Sala? Atti amoho.
Atti amoho is a delusion. What do you think about a delusion?
It's not what do you think about delusion, but he's asking, what do you think, Sala? Atti means there is. But here is a question, since he's asking, what do you think? Is there a delusion? Is there non-delusion? It's a negation. Is there non-delusion? The what? What is it? Yeah, moho is delusion. A moho, that's the opposite of delusion, non-delusion. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Wait, speak more loud. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, here we have the word vijja. Vijja, not avijja. Avijja is ignorance. Vijja is knowledge.
Knowledge.
Yeah.
The meaning of knowledge is...
But here the sense, you have to understand it. I say, Salha, the meaning of this, or this means knowledge. In other words, non-delusion means knowledge. Okay, then continue. Amulho ko ayang salha.
And the person is knowledge. And who is in such behavior, and he wants to kill the station being and the one who commit a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, such behavior will encourage others.
He won't encourage others.
He won't.
Yeah. Encourage others in such behavior. Yeah. But I think you left out the phrase and the first line here, amulho ko ayang salha vijja gatto. This, what does this mean? Amulho. Amulho ko ayang salha vijja gatto.
Amulho, this person, like this one.
Yeah, but it's the person how? Yeah, a person without delusion.
Without a delusion.
Yeah, and vijagato?
Who is ignorance?
Not ignorance.
Not ignorance.
No. Ignorance is avijja.
Avijja
is knowledge or wisdom.
So this is a person who is not ignorant.
Yeah, or a person who is wise or knowing. A person who possesses knowledge. So one who is not deluded, who has acquired knowledge or wisdom, doesn't take life, doesn't take what's not given, doesn't go to the wives of others, doesn't speak falsely, and doesn't encourage others in such behavior, which will lead for a long time to his welfare and happiness. Then the answer is Evang Bhante. which means?
Yes,
okay. Okay, from now, from this line to the end, full way? Right. Yeah. 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 And, yeah. Continue. Yeah. 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 Right, right. Yeah. In the sentence above that, that nova at the end, it's simply or not, as you said. Then these two words here, samatha and samadhina, they really have the same meaning. They're just alternative ways of saying the same thing. So we say taken up and undertaken, taken up and what?
In your Indian numerical discourses, Moli wrote undertaken and practice.
Okay, you could say undertaken and practice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are both of them past participles?
Yeah, they're past participles serving as adjectives for these things that are taken up. What would be the nominative?
You have two adjectives.
Oh, I see. What is the subject? Well, this whole discussion is speaking about these ime dhamma. You see, go up, tunking manyata salha, ime dhamma, kusala va, akusala va. So these things, that is, being free from greed, hatred, and delusion. Non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion. So all of that discussion with the plural, you see, always the plural, nominative plural, kusala, anavajja, vinyu, pasatta, then samatha, samadhina, the same subject, dhamma. Yeah. Right. You could say, samatha, samadhina, ime dhamma, hitaya, sukaya, sangvatanti. Third person singular? No, it's plural. Yeah.
And that's also modifying equality.
Well, it's the subject of that verb is ime dhamma. Okay. The last paragraph of this passage, Georgette.
When you really know these things are wholesome by yourself.
Yeah. Let's say, let's put the for yourself, or by yourself. Actually, it's atana is instrumental. So let's say when you know by yourself.
Yeah. When you know by yourself, these things are wholesome, these things are faultless, these things are undertaken, they lead to benefit and happiness.
Yeah. Wait, the atta here would have more the sense then, coming to the conclusion, rather than now. Then.
Yeah. You, Salvo. I wasn't really quite sure about this. It's the optative. You should abide having taken yourself.
Yeah. It's, I call a peculiar Pali idiom. Instead of saying simply, you should undertake them, or you should upasampaja, it's acquire them or enter upon them. Instead of saying, putting it simply that way, they say, then having acquired them or having entered upon them, you should dwell, you should live. You should live having entered upon them.
So why does it mean that you should be able to?
No, this is what you should do. Well, the Buddha isn't giving a command. He's not saying, because the Salha is not even his disciple yet, apparently. But he's just telling him, and also he's setting up a conditional or a hypothetical statement, conditional statement, when you know this for yourself, when you know all this for yourself, then you should act in such and such a way. No, he's not saying, giving a commandment and saying, you do this, but it's put out in this structure. If you know this, or when you know this, when you understand this, then you should behave in such a way. And so Salha, actually, obviously, he already knows this, since he's answered the questions in such a way as to confirm this. But the Buddha, this is just, a parent tells his child, when you come home from school, you should do your homework. It's the same thing as saying, when you come home from school, do your homework. Maybe the second, the imperative, it's a little stronger. But if he uses the optative form, you should do your homework, it's still making pretty much the same point. Okay, now we come to paragraph, to passage 2.
Can I just ask another question?
Yeah.
The ime dhamma is the subject of the sentence.
Yeah. Right.
And then we have Sukhaya.
Yeah.
These are singular.
Yeah.
Why are they not in plural subject? Why
are
they singular?
For this, ime dhamma samatha samadina digaratang hitaya sukhaya sang.
Hitaya and sukhata.
Sukhaya. Sukhaya. Because they're not adjectives qualifying dhamma. It's not even qualifying the individual. It's just they're used as nouns in their own right. They're not adjectives. This is well-being. Hita is welfare or benefit. And sukha is happiness. So these things, when they're undertaken, they lead to welfare and happiness. Just as in English, we don't say, these things undertaken lead to welfares and happinesses. Welfare and happiness is singular. Okay. Section number 2, first passage. Hui Chong. Yeah. Well, here, Dhamma has a more general sense, thing. Yeah. Because as you'll see, it's not referring to a quality, but a thing. Okay. Repeat again the whole sentence in translation. I say thus. But take the whole sentence from the beginning. Yeah. Yeah. I don't see any say. Young Avang, which thus. Yeah. 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 Wait. As this. Yataidang bhikkhave chitang. You were jumping into the second sentence. Yeah. Yeah. Right, yeah. Almost. I have to say, to get the exact syntax of the sentence, it's somewhat difficult. So I think you're not at fault for getting it a little bit off. Because one has to actually attend to the sentence to see the exact sense. And then it becomes clearer when you take the next part. But here I'll explain the first part. Okay, I do not see, O monks, even one other thing which, here the function of avang, I have to say it's not so clear in our English, but which, the senses, which when undeveloped is so unwieldy as this, namely the mind. The mind, O monks, when undeveloped, is unwieldy. I'd say nobody is at fault if they got that wrong, because it's a somewhat, the sentence, it looks simple, but it's tricky, because you don't know where exactly to put. One doesn't see that there's something of a break, a syntactical break between a bhavi tongue and a kamani tongue. But the sense is that when the mind is undeveloped, then it's unwieldy. And so, therefore, the second sentence says, Chitang bhikkhave abhavitang akamaniyang hoti. That is, the mind, when it's undeveloped, is unwieldy. And now continue with the next sentence and see if we can get that one. Right. Then finish. Is wieldy, yeah. The mind, when developed, is wieldy. Okay, that's correct. Now that Hui Chong has paved the way, the next few paragraphs should be fairly easy. Vern Jane? So that's translating a little freely. I would say, I do not see, O monks, even one other thing which, when undeveloped, leads to such great harm as this, the mind. Then the next sentence, please continue. Yeah. Or to keep to the structure of the Pali, the mind, O monks, when undeveloped, leads to great harm. Okay, take the next one also.
O monks, I do not perceive that when developed, leads to where developed, O monks, the mind.
Yeah.
The mind, O monks, when developed.
Yeah. It's a great advantage, yeah. A great benefit, yeah. Okay, good. Next paragraph. The finger points to Sister Brandy. Yeah. I have to say, this one, it's... I'm not really clear quite about the sense myself. Patu Bhutang means manifest. Yeah, it doesn't, I have to say, Patu Bhutanga must have some nuance in Pali that I'm not sure of. Usually it means something becoming apparent, something becoming clear or manifest.
Can we say unclear?
But it doesn't quite have that sense, and it doesn't have that sense in Pali. Let us skip this one. I'll have to check on the what other nuance the word Patu Bhutang might have. Sister Brandy, you skip over that one and then the positive count. Take the one that begins, well, they all begin the same way, the one that has a bhavi tongue, a bahuli katang.
Thing.
Yeah. Which... it seems you left out the second part of the sentence, which thus undeveloped and then not practiced frequently. Or I use uncultivated, a bahuli katang. Undeveloped and uncultivated. Then continue. No, but you didn't get mahato anataya sangvatati. Somebody help out? Which leads to great harm. Yeah. As this. As what? The mind. Okay. Then the next. The next. You said the mind not developed. Read again. Chitang bhikkave abhavitang abahulikatang mahato anataya sangvatati. Yeah, but we could follow here the English sentence structure. The mind, O monks, undeveloped, uncultivated, leads to great harm. Then, did we? We didn't do the bhavitang bahulikatang. Okay, then the positive part. You do it, Sister Brandy. You should be able to read it straight off. Yeah. Great benefit, let's say. Yeah. Which leads to great benefit. Continue, finish. Okay. Next one. Guo Qing Shi. You'd like to try that? Okay. Suki, you take over. Suki. Yeah.
I do not perceive even one other thing.
Yeah.
Undeveloped and uncultivated.
Yeah.
Which will bring sorrow?
Suffering, yeah. Which brings suffering.
As is the mind.
Yeah.
The mind, when not developed,
yeah,
uncultivated,
yeah,
will bring sorrow.
Or does bring sorrow. Yeah, it's not future. Does bring dukkha, suffering.
Well, what dukkha?
Yeah. Yeah, I will explain that. Okay, you know the word dukkha. Dukkha means suffering or sorrow. Now, this is a compound. You see, adivaha means to entail, to bring. And so when you use adivaha at the end of another word, it means that the thing being described brings that other quality. So dukkha-divaha means bringing suffering. Sukha-divaha means bringing happiness. And I should just explain this word, bahuli-kattang. It's like bhavita. It comes from bhaveti, the verb bhaveti, which means to develop, and that's a causative from bhavati or hoti, which means to exist. So the causative bhaveti means to bring into existence. But then bhaveti takes on an extended meaning of to develop. So we speak about developing the path. You say, Bhikkhu Aryang Atangikang Magang Bhaveti. A monk develops the Noble Eightfold Path. Or, So Bhaveti, So Satta Bojange Bhaveti. He develops the seven factors of enlightenment. Then to cultivate bahuli katta, this is past participle of verb bahuli karoti. And the word bahuli derives from bahu, which means many or much, then we add to bahula, which means often or even habitual, you could say. But then when bahula gets turned into part of a verb, the A turns into an I, a long I, plus the verb karoti. Karoti means to make or to do. So bahuli karoti, it's literally to make habitual or to make much, to make abundant. And so I render it to cultivate. So we have bhaveti bahuli karoti. One develops and cultivates the mind, or one develops and cultivates the path. Magang bhaveti bahuli karoti. Okay. Now we come to reading passage 3. Reverend Adam, would you like to take this?
No.
Then you wrong? Yeah, the kopana, it's almost untranslatable. But you see, this is continuing from, it's part of a sutta, it's just linking it to the previous sentence. So we don't, it's a little emphatic, or you say conjunctive, it just connects it to the previous sentence, but it doesn't have a translatable meaning. Kopana, yeah. Yeah. The ko is just, I call these salt and pepper words. They just give a little, accentuate the flavor of the sentence, but just as you don't serve salt and pepper as a dish, so they don't really have an easily translatable meaning. No, no, not here. Okay, just, okay. This, actually, idang is this. Right, yeah.
Birth from suffering.
Not from suffering. Here, I'm just seeing. Yeah, I see it's a little misleading. They didn't give enough explanation. Here, dukkha, sometimes it's used as a noun. As a noun, it means suffering. But it's also used as an adjective, in which we sometimes, to put it into English as an adjective, one would say painful. Though to say birth is painful, well, it is painful, actually. But in ordinary English, we would just translate and say birth is suffering. But here in the Pali, it's not saying that one noun is another noun, but this noun, birth, is characterized by this adjective, by this quality of dukkha. So the dukkha is, jati is a feminine singular, so dukkha is the feminine singular adjective. This is, you see, as a noun, dukkha is neuter. So when it is a noun, it's dukkang. But then when it functions as an adjective, meaning painful or pertaining to suffering, then it takes on the gender and number of the noun that it's qualifying. Why wouldn't it be?
Because it's a female ending.
Yeah. Yeah.
And jati end with the I.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't kanu now change to an I?
To become duki.
Is it okay to be ka? Why couldn't it be? Because it's female ending.
Well, you see, you have the explanation?
Well, I don't have an explanation.
So let's answer this one first. Yeah, because the I ending in jati, that is just the ending of that particular class of nouns. That's jati is a feminine noun of the feminine class ending in the short I. But the adjectives that qualify that, if the adjective has the form of ending in a short A, the stem form, then to become feminine, it turns into a long A. It doesn't become an I. Yeah. Say that.
If we have a noun serving as an adjective, when the noun, the stem form was a neuter, and when it changes into a feminine noun, the ending to the form
Well, I wouldn't say so much that the word dukkha is a noun turning into an adjective, but the word dukkha functions both as a noun and as an adjective. You know, it could play both sides of the fence.
But I don't have problems with that being typed like that all the time.
Yeah, probably so,
It's just confusing because later it changes
from Maranang to Maranang. As we go, you see, with Maranang, Maranang is a neuter.
Right.
And so then the adjective dukkha to become neuter becomes dukkang. Sampayogo, that is masculine. So dukkha qualifying sampayogo then becomes the masculine singular, dukkho.
So
it
would just the verb is suffering?
That's the most natural way to put it in English.
Okay.
But literally, if you want to translate literally according to Pali, birth is painful.
Old age is painful.
Yeah, but I don't like that because some of these things aren't always painful. But you could say that they're implicitly some suffering. Or you say unsatisfactory, maybe. Okay.
Birth is painful, old age is painful.
Yeah.
Illness is painful.
Yeah.
Death is painful.
Yeah. Association with the disagreeable.
Yeah.
Or with disagreeable things. Yeah.
Okay.
It could be upiyehi, it's general, so it, and then it's explained in the commentary. Disagreeable persons or unpleasant objects. Yeah.
Association with offering.
Yeah.
Disassociation with.
From, yeah.
From the pleasant one.
Yeah.
Or pleasant objects.
Yeah.
Suffering.
Yeah. This is a little tricky. Yeah. It's a little tricky.
That is suffering.
Okay. This yam pichang na labati. Here, the P there is just another P meaning also. So, yam pichang, here, ichang is desire or wish. Yang goes with ichang. And nalabati means not to get. So, literally, it's not to get what, literally, it's not to get one's wish. But more freely, okay, he could just wait. But more freely, we would say in normal English, we would say not to get what one wants. Because it's a little strange to say not to get one's wish. We could say not to get one's way is suffering.
Not to get what one wants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that is suffering.
That too is suffering. Yeah, the P there, I think it to translate it gives it a little more emphasis.
Suffering,
yeah.
In short,
yeah.
Five factors of clinging is suffering.
Right, yeah. Here are the five panchupadana kanda. The kanda, or these are the panch in Sanskrit, skanda. The five factors of existence, form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. Yeah, that's what we call the five aggregates. And the dukkha here, why does that end in a long A?
Because it's suffering.
Kanda is what?
Kanda. No,
why does, what gender is this?
Gender, I would guess long A, 10 feminine.
No.
Plural.
Right. Yeah, it's plural masculine. I think kind of masculine or neuter. Oh, no, it must be masculine. Otherwise, it would be kandani. So it's masculine plural. Yeah. You have to be a little careful because both certain singular feminine forms end in long A and masculine plural forms of the A stem end in long A. So don't get tripped up by that. Okay, let me explain that. This is, the case is instrumental. Sankhita is past participle, which means it comes from the verb kipati. You don't really have to write this. This is just explanation. Kipati is to throw. Sang gives a sense of together. So sankipati is thrown together. And then the past participle of that, sankita, means thrown together, literally. But idiomatically, it means briefly, concisely, in short. So it's an instrumental form used as an adverb or as an adverbial expression. We come across it quite often, like, for example, sometimes when the monks are having a discussion, they take up a short statement of the Buddha and they say, that which was explained or stated by the Blessed One, Sankhitena, briefly or concisely, who can explain the meaning of this? The opposite is, Vitarena, which means at length or in detail. Okay, I think we should finish paragraph 4. And we come back to Jahan Shi.
Venerable, of what characteristic is consciousness?
Yeah. Great. And now I want to just explain this kind of... Okay, let's take the answer. Take the answer, then I'll explain.
The next one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great King, consciousness is characterized by the act of cognizing.
Okay. I just want to explain this form, King Lakanang and Vijanana Lakanang. Yeah, this is a compound, you see, with Vijanana Lakanang. We have two nouns. First of all, the name for this type of compound is called Bahu Bihi compound. The word Bahu Bihi means much rice. And it's used because, maybe I have to explain the type of compound. Then we get the meaning. That's just the literal meaning. Okay, we take two nouns, or it can be sometimes an adjective, plus a noun. We join them together to make a compound. And then this compound, like in chemistry, they make a compound. And though the compound appears to be a noun because it's ending in a noun, it's actually an adjective qualifying another noun. A compound which functions as an adjective. Maybe to give there are some exact examples in English. I should have written them down. I was trying to think of them the other day. And I did think of a few. I didn't write them down. Now I don't remember them. But some approximate examples, let's say, could have black-haired man. Of course, the haired shows that it's an adjective. But if we were constructing this phrase in Pali, we would have to say, what would come out to black-haired man. So black hair is a noun in itself. But if we have the expression black-haired man, then it's functioning as an adjective qualifying man.
Well, ill will. Both are nouns.
Yeah.
It's functioning as an ill-willed person.
Ill-willed person.
Functioning as an adjective.
Yeah, yeah. I thought of a few in which you don't have to put the ED. Ah, okay. Okay, now I thought of one. Let's say a two-car family. The car is, two cars are from a noun, is a noun. But when you say two-car family, two-car becomes an adjective qualifying the family. Okay, so here, King Lakhana. You see, Lakhana is a noun meaning characteristic. Vijanana is an action noun, cognizing or knowing. But the compound expression is used as an adjective describing vijnana. So to translate, we would say vijnana, that's not a translation. Consciousness has cognizing or knowing as its characteristic. Yeah.
Make example.
Yeah.
Upaman.
Yeah.
Great king, just as the superintendent of a city.
Yeah.
Seated in the square in the center of a town.
Yeah.
Where to see a person coming from the eastern direction.
Yeah.
Where to see a person coming from
Dakina,
south direction. Where to see a person coming from the western direction.
Yeah.
Where to see a person coming from the northern direction.
Okay. Now just pause here. You see the agachantang? Agachantang. What part of speech is that? What form is that? No. So I heard it in this direction. Agachantang. I thought I heard it. No, no, no. Present participle, that's it. Present participle related to the verb agachati. Coming, he comes. And it's agachantang, what case? What case? Accusative. Why is it accusative?
Purisang.
Okay, good. Okay, continue.
Okay, so where to see? And then he goes to Eva Meva. In the same way, great king, a man sees whichever form with eyes, he cognizes that with consciousness.
Yeah. But I think to put it in normal English syntax, say, whatever form a man sees with the eye, he cognizes that with consciousness. You see, the yun in yansha, that is the relative. And what is that connected with? What completes the relative clause? What word?
Tongue.
Yang means which or whatever, and tongue means that. So you first have the relative phrase, yang cha puriso chakuna rupang pasati. Yang rupang, tongue, yang rupang pasati, tongue rupang vijanati. The form, whatever form one sees, that form one cognizes. Okay, continue.
So let me just rephrase it. Okay. Whatever form a man sees with eyes, he cognizes that with consciousness.
Right.
Whatever sound he hears with ears, he cognizes that with consciousness.
Yeah.
Whatever odor smell with nose, he cognizes that with consciousness.
Yeah.
Whatever flavor he tastes
with his tongue.
He cognizes that with consciousness. Whatever touch he feels or tactiles.
Yeah, or tactile feeling, sensation.
Yeah, sensation. He feels with his body.
Yeah.
He cognizes that with consciousness.
Yeah.
Whatever phenomena he discriminates
with the mind. Manasa.
With the mind. Yeah. He cognizes that with consciousness.
Yeah.
So, yes, and so Evan Koh, yes, great king, consciousness is characterized by the act of cognizing.
But here, Evang, it's not yes, great king, because he's not answering. He's just concluding his statement. So he says, thus.
Therefore,
yeah, thus or therefore.
Thus, great king, consciousness is characterized by the act of cognizing.
Yeah.
That's clever, Venerable Nagasena.
No, not thus clever. There's no thus here. Kalo
that's,
si.
I said that's clever.
No. What is the...
You are.
Oh. Kalo si. The si here, the note explains it, or at least it shows how to break it down. Asi means it's the singular, second person singular. We have ati, which means there is. Asi is you are. You are. So kalo plus asi, the a drops off, and it becomes kalosi. You are clever, Venerable Nagasena. Okay, any questions?
Kalosi, what page is it? Nominal?
Nominative, yeah.
Nominative, but then you say you are clever.
Yeah. The implied subject is you, but when you use the verb asi, it implies you, so you don't have to say. You could have said tvang kalo si. Tvang means you.
Because I was thinking then it would be there, you have cleverness.
No.
Okay, you are
clever. Yeah. Any questions? Okay, then next week we start the next lesson 4. I think I gave alternative renderings of the words, the vocabularies. Anybody didn't get them, then they can copy from my book or ask one of the others who's. Okay, next week I have to work to explain the grammar.